proving what you're saying. So it's a long road. That there is no secret. Today we expect that unique figure that will suddenly bring us to the light. That will never happen. It's a process, Peck explained, which he's explaining obviously from a Marxist standpoint that, you know, it's conditions, material conditions, it's movements to point to one person. It's like that thing about Lenin and other leaders of the Russian Revolution. Would there have been a Russian Revolution without Lenin? And the answer is most likely yes, there would have been. However, Lenin played a very important role. So there's got to be, you got to, you know, have a dialectical sort of view of it, where there's where you see the process of an individual, the impact an individual can have, but also that individual is not the whole movement, obviously. Let's see. Hints from a long history, quote-unquote, Peck calls the film. The action of the movie doesn't come from a hero, but from the grinding work of building new political coalitions, the tedious debates, networking, internal strife. This is, I got to see this movie because this is my a lot of my life, basically. Builds a revolution in thought and changes society. The real plot, the young Karl Marx says, is process. And rather than Marx, the elder statesman, surrounded by his halo of white hair, you know how you usually see that picture of him?
Yeah.
The young Karl Marx valorizes the personal stakes of being part of history. Though depicted as an uncommonly clear thinker, the young Karl Marx is as much about the high social cost of pursuing political revolution. Marx isn't a hero for his genius, and he wasn't treated like that. But for stepping up as he did, he struggles with bills, drinks too much with Engels, and feels the pressure of failing his growing family. Amazing stuff. Just as the Communist Manifesto emerged from a movement with Marx and Engels as the magnifying lens that focused ideas into clarifying fire, Marx, the man, arose from his family and friends, especially the relationship with his wife, Jenny, played by Vicky K-R-I-E-P-S from The Phantom Thread. Vicky Creeps? Cripes? I don't want to call anyone Creeps, but anyway. Anyway, there's really good other quotes. I'll leave it to that. Actually, I'll read one more real quick. I'm trying to go back to the fundamentals, Peck said. When you read an important book like the Communist Manifesto, it was a book written for workers. Oh, that's the quote I already read. Except for the back to fundamentals part. Anyways, it's playing in different cities now, but not in Boston. Go figure.
Really?
Yeah, Hollywood.
Not even BU. Yeah,
nowhere.
Not even Kendall.
Nowhere.
I gotta look that up.
Nowhere.
Kendall.
Look it up.
Come on.
Young Karl Marx. Yeah. What are you good?
I gotta no.
Hey, lobby.
I'm willing
them.
To bet they're playing at the place that we seen that hurt Nuremberg with Tom. Remember Tom Rad? How you doing?
My research so far shows no showings.
I'll look it up.
By the way, we got to give our legal ID again. We are WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. Also known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And we're a little slice of that community-based. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class Democratic Socialist perspective. And we are also heard on 91.5 FM. WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio, another name we have. And you can go to WMFO.org to listen online anytime to the variety of programs here. If you want a specific program like, say, Socialist Alternative Radio, go to schedule, click on Socialist Alternative Radio. We'll have at least one program archived. And if you want to lobby the station to archive more than two programs last 2 weeks, please do. But also... yeah, sometimes on Facebook, people will download our show, especially Finney and Rising. Big shout out to them for doing that. Okay. And also, we're going to read a public service announcement here because we have to do that. And
where's the tape over the camera on your screen?
You like that one? That's going to be hard to find, though.
I do that at the library. The librarian just stares at me like, what is he doing? I go like this. I put a tape.
Yeah.
One of those, like, black tapes for electrical work.
Yeah. We've got one on our computer at home. Yeah, no, we cover that the camera at home.
I don't want the NSA looking at me as I'm looking through, you know.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, shout out to Edward Snowden or whatever. What's he doing now? What's the latest? I haven't read
much. He's in Russia.
Lately. Yeah, I know. But,
or Hong Kong.
Yeah. Hey, here's one that might be relevant, unfortunately. Know your cell phone rights. It's a little complicated. I'll have to read it quick, though. But whether you're talking on your cell phone, whether you're taking your cell phone with you on a walk, in your car, or to a civil protest, a protest, you should know your legal rights, maybe even a strike. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that police must obtain a warrant to search a person's cell phone. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled that a police must obtain a warrant to search a person's cell phone. However, a phone without a passcode can readily be searched by anybody holding it. And a Virginia court recently ruled that a defendant can be compelled to unlock a device that's protected only by a fingerprint sensor. So consider using a key code password and setting your phone screen to lock very quickly when no one is using it, particularly if you expect to be in a potentially volatile situation. By the way, this is not part of the PSA, but I'm wondering, what is it with these crackers? And you got to deal with the South all the time, it seems, with this reactionary stuff. I know I'm overgeneralizing, but come on,
crackers? Virginia.
Yeah. Conservative whites.
Oh, crackers, okay. I'm like, crackers.
Yeah. Anyway, while the police can't legally, I'm just venting for a minute. I know it's more complicated than that. When the police can't legally force you to unlock your phone, they can ask you to. And if you do that, you forfeited your rights. The correct answer to a cop's request to search you, your vehicle, or your phone is, no, officer, I do not consent to a search. Thank you. Finally, remember that the police can always ask a judge for a search warrant, so think carefully about what's stored on your phone, including photos, contacts, and application data or app data. You can learn more about your rights for the Electronic Freedom Foundation, EFF.org. A public service message from the EFF and your freedom-loving friends here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. And we'll do one more because we're supposed to. And this is very relevant to our earlier discussion about the unnecessary power outages, or let's say they're unnecessary. The way the grid is set up makes it more prone to that, but also the ridiculous wait times to get the power back on because they don't hire enough people. They're just trying to make more profits. Time to take
under
public ownership.
And if you get somebody from the South, they're going to be out besides themselves with all this snow. Like, I never dealt with this.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that they've gotten snow lately in the South. Yeah. With the global warming stuff and the global...
It's snowing in Houston.
And the climate change. Yeah. Blackout emergency preparedness PSA, public service announcement. If the electrical power and everything else that depends on it, this is the problem, like cellular communication system, the internet shut down, would you freak out? The answer is yes for me. How long could you stay at your home with supplies you currently got? Not long. Do you have enough stored water and ready to eat food to last 3 days? How about a week? Unexpected situations such as power outage, water disruption, and other emergency can happen at any time, so be prepared. In addition to food and water, it's also a great idea to keep a few flashlights, other non-flammable light sources handy. Candles and other open flames can be very dangerous, and the worst possible time to cause a fire is when there's some other emergency going on. A public service message from Ready.gov and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. So yeah, I agree with that. I'm like, I got this little survivalist streak in me, but I'll tell you a couple problems. That the parts of your house being tied to electricity is more insidious and dangerous than people realize, because I can't think of anyone whose heating system is not tied to electricity, really. I mean, we have a pellet stove, unless you have like a fireplace. We have a pellet stove in the fireplace that's tied to electricity, right? The heating system is tied to electricity and is run, and is like many heating systems, sends water through radiators. If that water freezes, the minute you turn the heat back on, it bursts out of the pipes and floods. This is an extremely dangerous thing, totally tied to power. And, of course, your refrigerator. We've thrown out about $100 worth of food because of these power outages. And we have kids, we play it safe. Like, there's supposed to be like a two-hour rule. If your stuff in your refrigerator has been in there only 2 hours and you haven't opened the door a lot, it's probably still good. Any more than that, you're taking a risk. We have kids, so we don't risk it.
What about leaving it outside in the cold?
Probably okay. We didn't have time to do that, but that's probably okay. I would say it is. Especially in a cooler, especially in some ice. That would really help. That was my plan. Cooler, ice, throw everything in there. Didn't have time. The power outage happened when I wasn't home. And when I was at work because of Harvard, that we talked about earlier. Harvard University. What is it? Someone told me it was the fifth largest employer in the state. I used to read it was like first or second. 15,000 workers, something like that, maybe more. And they won't call snow days. They won't let the workers go home or stay home. Like I'm literally driving into work, and the government in the state of Massachusetts, even the Republican
Baker,
who's an idiot, even they are like saying, we are really encouraging people not to drive today. And Harvard has forced me to drive today. So talk to Harvard. Oh, but they're afraid to talk to Harvard. They probably graduated from Harvard, It's all a big, in the top there. But anyway, fill in the blank. We can't swear on the air. So West Virginia teacher strike. We got to take a quick musical break, and then we'll come back and talk about some insider information and more about the West Virginia teacher strike. And you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. Jeff and
Diego.
You got to tell your work story when we come back.
I will.
All right. And thanks for tuning in, and stay tuned, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. And that was an old standard for our show anyway. That was the Clash from their album Sandinista back in the day. And that was called Magnificent Seven. I hope you got the Marks and Engels reference there. And we are now back to Social Alternative Radio, the talk part of the talk of music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. And we promised to get to Diego's work story.
Yeah.
In all its glory.
Would you like questions or?
Yeah, well, okay, I could set it up. I mean, Diego was working the fast food route, which is really difficult and not very lucrative. Yeah, and he just got a better job. Maybe we should leave the new place anonymous. But it's a job with real benefits and real scheduling. Like
institutional.
There you go.
It's a hospital. And just started this week, last week, and it's going great. I mean, gee, an extra dollar here and there.
Yeah, the pay's higher.
Things I didn't even know.
The pay's higher.
A set schedule. I got weekends off. It's like,
there you go.
What happened? I hit the lottery on the job lottery here.
We think it's union, but nobody has said that yet, which is very weird.
Well, the benefits are like very, you know, union type.
Well, sometimes what happens is that industries, like including the hospital industry in Boston.
Oh, they match it because
they match
the unions are so strong. They don't want me.
Matches the unions, yeah. But I have a feeling it might also be union, but we'll see. But anyway, the point of the story is...
But there's a downturn to this, too, of this place I've noticed.
Oh, sure.
And I'm, as a dialectical materialist that I am, a Marxist that I am, I already see the between-the-line flaws.
The exploitation and all that.
The temps.
Yeah.
There's temps going in there. They're trying to, you know, hey, we want people, we want to hire people... And they're all Colombian by the most part, without papers.
I just hear
students trying to, you know, like one guy I met. He's a technical engineer. He works for Petrol in Colombia.
Yep.
He's here to study English so he can go back home to Colombia and continue his profession.
Yep.
But you know, I guess he says the manuals over there. If he knew more English, because things, you know, English is the universal language of the world here.
Yep.
By learning English, going back to Colombia to the company he works for as an engineer, he can excel and make more money.
Yep.
So, there you go.
But the...
Real interesting.
The other thing you were mentioning off-air is the transition, the bumpy transition from the low-paying job. By the way, the temp thing, seeing in the cracks and all that, seeing what's really going on.
Yeah.
I had the same experience when I started working at Harvard. That for at that time, I had a jump from a low-paying retail job, like a bookstore job. I think I mentioned that, into Harvard with like more benefits and stuff. This is before we had the union, before we organized the union, and for clerical and technical workers. And the but it was still an improvement over what I had experienced.
What you were doing retail,
yeah. And then, but the minute I got there, I was like, saw a lot of problems, including understaffing, and then. After you get used to that higher pay, quote unquote, you realize that inflation and other things are just eating it right up. And
it's like I was saying.
And all of a sudden, it doesn't seem like very high pay.
Yeah, I might be making $5 to $6 more, but if my rent goes up next year, say, you know, that's gonna be just as I'm back to square one.
Yeah, and I got that job when rents were increasing drastically, and even taking on roommates and stuff, you'd be paying a ton of money, but. But yeah, so what happened? So you were working in a pizza joint, and then...
Well, I left that pizza joint a long time ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were working in
Mediterranean Expired Tahasa Kitchen.
Yeah, got it.
It was abrupt because I wanted to give the guy 2 weeks' notice, but then the management where I'm working now in the hospital said, well, you start immediately after orientation. Your schedule's already set. For 3 months. Like literally, boom, boom, boom. I already have the schedule. I know what my schedule is. Unless I need a certain day off within that week, I can always request it or something like that, or switch it up with somebody else. But other than that, it is what it is. I wasn't going to say to them, I need to give 2 weeks notice to the person who's paying me less. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to jump on the opportunity where I need to jump in. If not, the train's going to... I'm going to miss the train. So it was abrupt. I had to quit. I had to call it in on Friday and say, I'm sorry, but I'm literally have to quit now. It starts right away.
Right.
Went and left my key that night. Come Sunday, because the store is closed on Sunday, the boss leaves me the most nastiest, call or voicemail. he's doing improvements on the store, and he said he calls me up and says, because of your dishonesty, all right, here we go. Because of your dishonesty and you have the key and access to the store, I am here from 8 to 10. If you don't return that key between here and there, I am forced to call the police.
The police.
To acquire that, reacquire that, or whatever, you know, key from you. Really? So I text him back. I left it with Jamila, who's the person who closed on Friday.
Yeah.
And ha ha ha.
I love how the police are at the beck and call of bosses all over the world.
Yeah.
Like when I went on strike, direct line.
It's not 911; it's a direct line.
Yeah, if you're in an apartment or something, you have to wait till they can make their way over. And I've experienced this directly. But if you're in a workplace, and you're the boss, I mean, you're management. Like I told you, I've told a story before on the air. But when I was working in a big factory, one of many I worked in upstate New York, and I was in the bakery workers union. We went on strike at midnight. And we go on strike at midnight, and there's all sorts of cops around. What are they doing up in the middle of some industrial park up in the hills of Albany at midnight, Albany, New York? Kind of hard to figure out. And then why are they there at every picket line? Like clockwork, getting all that extra money, right? You know, it's just they boom, boom, boom. They just jump. They jump for the big business, the corporations. They jump, you know? And if you need
workers got mugs, we'll get to it.
Yeah, you need
how
help.
Long ago was it? It needs to be 24 hours before you even report it. What?
Yeah, I was attacked.
How insane is that?
I was attacked on the street. Well, it sounds like assault. They're just gonna say they hit you first, so why bother?
Or
you hit
an alleged
in a fight. Yeah, alleged assault. You know, there's so many crimes that affect working people in a very direct way, like wage theft and other things. Cops will not show up for a wage theft. Hello, I didn't get paid this week. You're gonna come and do something? Click. Wage theft. Assault, a lot of the times, the cops will just, they'll just be like, especially if it's a man, and I'm not saying women have it easier, I'm saying women get assaulted more, I'm just saying that there's certain crimes that they kind of wall off that actually hurt working people a lot, you know? So they'll chalk up a lot of assaults to, we can't prove it, it was a fight, you know, it's like going both ways or something, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. And it was an assault, someone got assaulted with it. Other things like, when you're in a workplace, especially a non-union workplace, and you stand up for your rights, how many times is call security or call the cops and you're escorted out of a place, you got no rights?
I'll give you an example. Whole Foods. The day I got fired. It was a Monday. Tuesday I was off. Wednesday I went back for my pink slip. All right. Monday, they escorted me out. I couldn't even walk around the store to influence or talk to all the coworkers. They walked me out like I was gonna steal something.
Yeah.
And the day they gave me the pink slip, same thing. Get your stuff from the locker.
Mm-hmm.
Escorted me out.
Yeah.
And then, I had a friend of mine who did this. He got same situation. He's like, I'm just going to get milk. Don't worry about it. I'm going to just gonna get milk. I'm going to buy it. What, do you think I'm going to steal it?
Yeah.
Made a big scene. They literally called the cops on him.
Ah!
All he wanted to do was buy milk.
Yep. Not allowed to. Not allowed to buy milk at whole paycheck.
Oh, no, we don't want your money. I'm like, what are you talking?
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
This is insane. This is happening in front of customers, in front of... Nobody says a word.
Well, I knew a whole paycheck was some evil business right from the start when they had the no solicitation thing, the biggest thing on their front door practically. It'd be like Whole Foods, and then that's the biggest thing. But that's like no solicitation, no.
What is
and
that, no loitering?
Rules. No, that's you can't go in and talk to anybody or hand out leaflets if they think that you're doing it. It's really to stop union organizing. That's the main reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fancy words for you can't, don't try to come in here and organize a union. Now, when the labor movement gets energized, signs like that are just ironic. They're a laugh. They're a joke. You can just walk in and talk to anybody if you're strong enough. You got enough people. And there was some agitation in, I think it was Star Market around some issue. I can't remember what it was in the 90s. And I was part of like big groups of people, union activists and others that would just walk in. They couldn't do anything about that. They just sort of frowned at you. I'm sure they had a call into the cops.
They were walking right behind you. His management's behind you, like
that,
a shadow.
That happened.
Like a shadow. That like happened. You just gotta listen
but there, but
to
there were too many of us for them to for the manager to try anything. You know, And but the worst story, I've mentioned this one before, but there was a in the late 90s in Somerville, there was a Labor Party inspired ballot referendum for single payer health care. And and it was a non-binding referendum, but it was important to get the word out. We were doing a lot of education, and we got the law. This is when people in Social Alternative were working with the Labor Party and part of the Labor Party. This was a movement in the 90s to actually get a Labor Party going in the United States. A lot of people don't know about it. In Massachusetts, in certain cities, we were doing single-payer healthcare referendums, non-binding. In Somerville, we go to that, remember the Food Master that's now a Stop and Shop in Teal Square?
Yep.
So we were in front of the Food Master, and Food Master, we used to call it Food Disaster.
This is a
grungy store, chain of stores, cheapo food in various parts of Cambridge and Somerville, or Somerville mainly, right? Where else was Food
Usually
Disaster?
Usually it was Somerville and Melrose. Basically all the Whole Foods now that they bought out.
Yeah. So Food Disaster, or whatever it was called. What was it called again? Food? I can't remember the funny
Johnny's
name now.
Johnny's Food Master.
Johnny's Food Master, yeah. So then it became Food Master and Food Disaster. Yeah, okay. So we have the actual law on a printout, you know, on a leaflet that allows you to, for a referendum in Massachusetts, go in front of stores and collect signatures. It's perfectly legal. This goes back to our earlier discussion about legality and illegality under capitalism. It's who has the power at the moment, really. Mm-hmm. And so just like what we're talking about, the manager who thinks he owns the local cops, he gets on the phone. Now, he didn't notice us right away, so this wasn't a total waste on our part. We actually got a bunch of signatures for about 20 minutes. Then he finally noticed us. And he and there's about, I don't know, six or seven of us. And they call the cops. The cops come rolling in, two cars, and we show them the law, and we talk to them, and they go away because these are like regular cops or whatever, and they saw the law. It took a while, but they went away. And
were
then
they nice about it, or they were like
both. It did varied, you know. And so then the cop, then the boss, the big boss, the manager there, gets back on the phone and calls another cop. Now this is one cop on a motorcycle. But he's Captain Such and Such. Captain Such and Such says, I don't care what the law says. A verbatim quote. All you think is America, land of the free. Listen to this. Verbatim quote. I don't care what the law says. I'm going to arrest you all if you don't leave immediately. Now, we'd already been out there by that time, about 45 minutes. We had literally young, you know, high school, college kids with us. We just looked around and said, decided to pack it up. And we immediately went to the office down. We had an office downtown at that time. And downtown crossing. So we went from Somerville into Boston. Not all of us, but a few of us. And I remember meeting with the organizer at the time that was organizing for the Labor Party and said, you know, this just happened to us and it's completely illegal and we really want to go after them. And he said, well, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but this is what he said. Labor Party organizer. I kind of agree with it and kind of don't agree with it, but just hear me out for 1 second. He said, well, we could go after them for this because it's clearly illegal what they did. But, you know, we're very understaffed. We have very few people, activists out there. Do we spend our time on that? Because they can try that stuff anytime they want, and they do. This guy had a long history in the labor movement, so he knew what he was talking about. Or we can try another place and just continue to do what we want. Because we also did, believe it or not, Market Basket didn't call the cops on us. And we were, like, doing Market Basket like crazy. So we just decided to...
The one in Somerville.
Yeah. We decided to forget Johnny's
Food
Disaster.
Well, I noticed they got a bulletin board there. You can just post stuff, and they're not going to, what is this?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. We should try that.
You know?
But anyway, so it's like...
I was still in a newspaper there when I was younger.
Yeah.
For 25 cents or some Hispanic newspaper.
Yeah.
Oh, I sell them like hotcakes.
They didn't bother you?
No.
That's good.
I was like, I'm just making money. Don't get away from me. I'm trying to make a little extra money.
Yeah, I don't know. Food, you know, I went into Whole Paycheck recently, and... you know, I don't know. I can't make any predictions about how they're doing, but it looks like it's maybe a little. I said that about Trader Joe's. I think also with Whole Paycheck, I think it's like.
Well, now with the Amazon thing, they got this thing outside.
Well,
order fresh Amazon.
I think it's
and pick up here. I go, what? How fresh can it be if you order, and it's literally a box.
Yeah.
I'm not lying.
Yeah,
if you're ever on your break. Go to the Prospect Street one. It's right in front of you. It's this weird.
Yep.
Order fresh from Amazon. Yeah. Fresh.
Like, well, I think they're trying some stuff. They're owned by Amazon now, like you're implying. But I don't know. I think maybe the glitter has worn off somewhat, or maybe that's already been happening for a while. And now you have like Wegmans coming in and other stores. So I'm wondering, like, maybe like a whole Paycheck's going to have harder days to come. I hope so.
They've been having hard days.
Yeah.
Don't look for any little excuse to get rid of you, and they did with me.
And Market Basket, with all that stuff about how wonderful they were during that management strike, which everyone thought was, it was, some people thought was a real strike, including some leftists, to their shame. Ever since that strike, I have a feeling they've been really clawing back at whatever little benefits they had and really going after the workers. I can't prove it because I haven't talked to any directly, but I just everybody there is so new, you know. And we knew that before. Like, that was one of the things they would talk about. Oh, they give you profit sharing, and they give you these benefits, and then you find out the holes in that. You have to be there so long. You have to be a certain level.
Number one, if you're a part-timer, I know. I was.
Yeah, you work there. That's what experience. I'm saying. Yeah, I learned some of this from you.
25 hours a week, you don't qualify. You're a blue coat, you don't qualify. You're a red coat, you're management full-time. Now you get your gain sharing at the end of the year.
Exactly.
At the end of the year, not every paycheck. I mean, at the end of the
fiscal
year.
I understand. But also, I'm saying, like, you're right, and I learned a lot of stuff from you. But I'm saying also that, like, you know, a lot of that stuff kicked in after a certain number of years. And I just see so many new people, you know, because they still wear those badges in most of the
people. I've been here for 2 years.
Yeah,
I've been here
it's always years. Like I've 1 year or 2 years for the most part, you know. And then you see someone been there for longer, and it's odd. It's not the norm, you know. Anyway, let's leave the wonderful world of retail and your old
which
boss.
Which I did. Thank God.
I know. I'm glad you got out
institution.
Of that.
Institution.
Retail is, as probably some of our listeners know.
Would that be considered an institution where I'm at? It's an institution. The hospital.
Institution's a, yeah, it is, yeah. Oh. I mean, it's also a word that's used for a lot of different things, but you're right. Yeah, it's an institution. And
it's not retail.
It's not retail. No, well, it would be, if you're using work categories, that would be healthcare.
Okay.
Yeah. Not nice. Retail. The thing with retail is, like, I'm not saying our listeners don't know this, but it's low rate of unionization traditionally, historically, unfortunately. Has to change, but it hasn't yet, really. And therefore, you know, with no workers' party and a history of radical struggle that people can remember and all that kind of stuff on a mass scale, boy, retail, you're just really... You're really a target. You're really in, no pun intended. you're really in trouble.
Precarious.
Yeah, precarious living in retail. To the point, like this, all this scheduling stuff. I know people that work in retail. There's people in social alternative that work in retail, and the scheduling thing is just hellish. You know, they're really into not giving you set hours,
or
giving you
hours,
or really screwing with the supposed set hours. And by the way, I keep reading about that in Britain, too. I think.
Also, if I leave 11:30 instead of, because I get done early, I still get my half hour.
Yeah.
Because 40 is 40, the guy said.
Well, in
40 is 40. That's why I'm like, where was my union rep then? Tell me already. I'm like, why are you giving me all these, like...
Well, there have been a lot of... hold on one second. There have been a lot of arrangements, let's put it, good ones, or improvements at least... through workers, through unions, right? So, for example, I heard that, and I didn't experience this myself, but I heard that the building trades got so powerful in Boston that at one point, like in the 70s or whatever, for a while, maybe into other decades, maybe before that, they had Fridays off, basically. They just, the union was so strong, said, well, we're going to get paid for 40 hours, but we're taking Friday off. Sort of like that union, the metal workers union in Germany that just negotiated 28-hour work week.
Mm-hmm.
No cut in pay. You know, more pay.
They do 28 hours, get paid like somebody doing 40.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
So there have been a lot of arrangements like that. Not a lot, but some where unions are very strong. They can start to claw back some of that surplus value. It's still exploitative. It's still, as workers, we're still losing at the end of the day. The equation is never in our favor because we're never paid the full value of what we produce, but or the value we add to the production process. But in some cases where the unions got really strong, they would start to make inroads into that unfairness. At other times, though, we're not trying to like mislead our listeners. You know, you could be, we're not saying, when we talk about the Virginia teacher strike or some of the past, we're not saying that the unions are on a huge offensive right now. I mean, last year, 262,000 people joined unions, more than left unions. So there was a plus addition to the labor movement in the United States by 262,000. That's, however, a pretty low number. And it's after some years of decline, I believe. I'd have to double check, but I believe there was years of decline, obvious decline. So it's not like a huge turnaround. We're not trying to say that. And I understand that you could be in a union and not even know it. I mean, you could be in my union at Harvard and not really know it. You'd see the union dues come out of your check, so you know that. You might get some email or something. Mm. But as far as actually participation.
So if I see a reduction there, then I am in a union.
Yeah. I mean, union dues are really worth it. It's always better to be in a union.
Oh, I wouldn't. I would be like, hey, what's this for? Yeah. I would be like, good.
Yeah.
You want more? You know?
No, union dues are worth it, believe it or not. And but they are spent on some bad things sometimes, like supporting Democrats a lot, unfortunately, and supporting, I'm not saying they should support Republicans, obviously. They shouldn't support any of the corporate parties, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian. None of that stuff should get union on $1 of union dues. Yeah. And,
I hope the dues will go to, like, funds for when you go on strike. You can
still go on strike
maintain your workers'
There should be a strike fund. My union does not have a strike fund. My union leadership uses the word strike as a pejorative.
Just like the Methuen workers in 2010 and the Jaws, remember?
Yep, I remember that. Yep. So I forget where I was going with that, but so what I'm trying to say is that it might sound like we're exaggerating the power of unions or something. We're not trying to do that. But workers organized at the point of production and distribution, and notice the word organized, are a very powerful force or a very powerful potential force. So it's no accident that socialists want people to be organized, workers to be organized at the point of production and distribution, not just through unions, but also through workers' parties, also through revolutionary parties, through whatever organization we need at the time. In Russia, at a certain point, took the term workers' councils or Soviets, where you'd have unions and parties and community groups all together based on workplaces, neighborhoods, and so on. And that, because the situation was getting so revolutionary that people wanted to unite and fight to a great extent, and that worked very, very well. Who knows what that will look like if we get that far in the United States in the future? But the point is that on the other hand, you can be in a union that seems dead, and you're wondering where your union dues are going. You never see the union rep, and management and the union are clearly colluding together because the union leadership has forgotten how it came into existence in the history of the labor movement and how it was built by socialists as an anti-capitalist movement, not a pro-capitalist movement. But even a union that can, like the West Virginia teachers, I don't know their history as those different unions, but again, to segue back into that, because we're running out of time, is, again, a union that's, numerically pretty big, because the public sector unions in the United States, they still have a presence. Private sector's down to like 5%, which makes it very weak, but still there. I'm just trying to say that a union that can appear to be moribund, compared to be dead, not going anywhere, can be reinvigorated. And what happened with the West Virginia teacher strike is that some union activists got on Facebook and started comparing notes and saying what they didn't like. And they were very low paid. They were like one of the lowest paid states in the country for teachers. They hadn't got a raise in a long time. There's incredible poverty in West Virginia. And they really, but there are these traditions that we talked about earlier in the labor movement that you have children's and grandchildren of miners that fought hard for workers and won decent pay and benefits through the United Mine Workers Union, which is now very weak, but in the past was very strong. So they remember those traditions, and that helped them. And they didn't forget they were workers. Teachers in some places think they're some sort of super
intellectual
upper middle class something or other
intelligentsia,
when really they're just workers, because the education system is so huge in this country that needs a lot of teachers. And if you think that you're special, just try to stand up for your rights sometime and see what happens. Union or non-union, especially non-union, to try that, you're in trouble. But anyway, this Facebook thing took off. And I got the whole chronology of how it went. But again, I'm going to have trouble reading my notes. But if from memory, I think what happened was it went from some smaller actions. It didn't come out of nowhere. You know, like there was, you know, rallies. You know, not hugely attended.
Kind of like Occupy, they started with the
they had
social media.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, boom.
There you go. That's a good analogy. Much more organized than what Occupy, though, and no anarchists, thank goodness, or very few, whatever, because it was much more well organized. So they had, for example, a rally of 1,000 in the Capitol before the strike. I'm not sure how far back, but not that far back. That's not a lot, but those activists then met more activists. Like, you know, and it wasn't just on Facebook, it was in person. And they went back and extended this network. And they, to all counties, all the counties in West Virginia, I think it was like 55 maybe counties, were you know, they had a plan to really reach out to everybody and not just say, we'll just go with the strongest places first. And they had sort of, you know, showdowns, hearings, and stuff like that. Mix it up with the state legislature, which is very... they had a Democrat that turned Republican, who's governor. They have a conservative senator, who's a Democrat. They have a Republican dominated legislature, I believe. Again, like we said earlier, a state that went for Trump. And yet, they kept testing the waters with these actions, and it got better and better. And to the point where... They had a network built, you know, not outside the union, part of the unions. I'm not sure how involved the top leadership was, but they were able to get to the point where they had this big vote, like I mentioned earlier, where they wanted to include everybody, not just the people that were, you know, in the unions, and not just people in their own union. So there's like 3 to 5 unions involved here. I think it was more like 5. And they... you know, had an amazing amount of unity and solidarity. Now, part of that might come from the conditions there that we already mentioned. Intense poverty, low pay, really, really low pay for teachers for a long, long time. That doesn't necessarily lead to any kind of strength, but it was something that, you know, obviously angered people. And they still had the union, but again, it's in a right-to-work state. Now, the thing I found out that's interesting is usually right-to-work laws are there to just gut the union financially. Like this Janus thing mm-hmm. coming up with the Supreme Court, that is there to undercut the union's ability to collect union dues or agency fees in lieu of union dues because they have to represent everybody in a grievance or contract negotiations or whatever. So some unions, like in Wisconsin, where that when that was passed, folded. Others adapt. Nationwide, unions are protesting, but not enough. There's not enough of a movement against Janus. Most union leaders have decided they're going to try to adapt afterwards. That's fine, but it doesn't go far enough. If we had mass rallies right now, which is what Social Alternative is calling for, we could stop the Supreme Court from you know, ruling in favor of Janus, which they're probably going to do, which is going to mean, again, taking away the union's ability to organize financially for the most part. They can still, on their own, go around and talk to people individually, build up their own network of dues and all that. It takes a long time. It's very hard. But in West Virginia, for some reason, that part of the automatic dues collection from the checks continued, but they lost other rights. And they were technically a right-to-work state. And again, as we explained, public workers, teachers are usually forbidden from striking anyway legally, but they have to, so they go out anyway, so-called illegally. And in a right-to-work state, that's even amplified because they've lost other rights. So that's an amazing thing when you stop and think about it, that here's a unified militant teacher strike of 35,000 or 32,000, 33,000, whatever we said, goes across the entire state, includes all the different workers involved. I mean, substitute teachers, they organized everybody. Cafeteria workers, everybody was involved. And high degree of unity, good militant labor traditions, but also... a state where the workers have really taken it on the chin through the weakening of the mine workers, through the right to work legislation, through this different the Republican legislature, the Democrats, the conservative Democrats that are there. And I don't want to make too much of a difference. I mean, even if it was liberal Democrats, it would be the same situation. So what this culminated in was a victory, though. despite everything stacked against them. That's what's so interesting about this. They went out and essentially, and they had to defy their own union leadership at a certain point, made it a wildcat strike. The unioners wanted to go back on a promise that the governor would bring a 5% wage increase to the legislature, and the workers said quite correctly, screw that. We've heard of promises before. We are not going to go back to work until we have in writing a guarantee of the 5%. And to fast forward,
5%.
This all happened in a week. Yep, this all happened in a week. They got the 5%, not only for themselves but all the state workers. After the government, the governor, and so on had tried to say only 1 or 2% after the strike started, and then saying 5% teachers, but only 3% to everybody else. Teachers kept saying no, 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 and they got it. They won. So this was this past Tuesday. A deal to give all public, I'm quoting from an interview from Jacobin magazine with two teachers. on Tuesday afternoon, a deal to give all public employees of the state of West Virginia a 5% pay raise was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. Notice how fast they can work. The governor and the legislature, all that stuff, bipartisanship and all that. They can work really fast when the people are on fire, when the people are struggling. You know, through the unions. Now, the union isn't everybody in West Virginia. The unions aren't everybody. But they were getting enough support that they felt like it was rebellion getting out of their hands.
Yeah.
The ruling class was afraid here, and that's what you need. And even that doesn't last forever. You need more than that, but that's a start. A struggle that mobilized tens of thousands of workers, won widespread popular support, and was led by rank-and-file leaders, ended in a tangible victory. Confusion arose, however, as reports indicated the Republican state politicians wanted to offset the increase pay with cuts to social services. But though the Republicans are threatening to do that, to pay for part of this through cutting essential services, the bill itself is not tied to any such cuts. So there may be a fight, and the teachers are ready for that fight, to stop the legislature from going after social benefits. So anyway, the rest of the article, this article in Jacobin, is, I think, worth reading. It's from, I don't have the exact date, but it's like last Wednesday or something. They're just talking about how happy they were with it, and they should be, with the result. Because you're right, Diego, you're right. 5% doesn't cover everything. But there was also a healthcare issue. 5% after nothing for so long is a bump. Here's something that they already said. A lot of people have already forgotten is how much we have already won. Even before the walkouts began, in his hope to avoid a strike, the governor dropped his push for catastrophic changes to PEIA, which is a healthcare program, such as the total family income requirement and the Go 365 wellness program. The government was forced to keep PEIA insurance premiums and deductibles at their current level. In other words, the governor of the state was threatening healthcare concessions that would wipe out or even put you into negative territory in terms of your wages. This has happened with many, many workplaces, including at Harvard. Unions will say to the workers, union leaders will say to the workers, we've negotiated for you a little raise, 1, 2, 3%, that kind of crap. And not say to you, gee, the basic inflation rate in general, plus the healthcare concessions we also are pushing through, are gonna make you and put you in negative territory. You're not going to really get a raise. You think you're really going to raise? You're not getting a raise. They won't say that clearly, but that's the case. So the government was forced to keep the PEIA insurance premiums and their deductibles at their current level. And also because of the strike, we were able to ensure that a lot of bad education bills weren't able to get passed. The charter school bill didn't go anywhere. Additional anti-union bills like payroll protection all were dropped. Now that part is really, really important because people don't understand the full effect that unions have on society. You know, like we were talking earlier about how you could work in a non-union sector of an industry that they're afraid of the unions because the unions have organized a certain percentage, so they get the same thing. That happened a lot in the 60s and 70s. If you track decline in union membership, it actually started in 1953 because there's a correlation between radical leadership, socialist leadership, communist leadership, and the lack of in terms of strength of the labor movement. Once they started to get rid of the communists, the socialists, and so on from the labor movement, which was McCarthyism was a big part of that, also the post-war upswing itself, in a way, that weakened the unions immediately. They started losing members. Now, some years, as it got into the, Carter and Reagan years, they started losing members a lot more, continuing to this day. But the point is, there was this decline. Now, what happened was so many things came out of the union movement, even during that decline, or part of it at least, that people just think had miraculously appeared, like pensions, higher pay, of course, but health care. And that is a double-edged sword, because the unions made a deal back in the late 40s, I think it was. I have to check the dates, where they basically said, early 50s, they basically said, the government needs to push corporations to give health care. And it was heavily regulated back then. So it was all Blue Cross, Blue Shield for the most part. And, they did some deal for that rather than fight for single payer or socialized medicine. It was a huge mistake, and we're still feeling it. But the point was, there was no health care. There was very little health care before that. So they got something, but it wasn't enough. Anyway, our message, again, union, this is for general social benefits. They said they're getting this thing about one of the teachers, how they want to maybe cut essential services to pay for this raise. We're not going to stand for it. Our message has always been, this is a quote, that we want to reverse corporate tax cuts, which they've had in Virginia. We want to raise the gas severance tax so that we can prioritize the needs of people of West Virginia who are struggling. We have demonstrated through action that our priorities take care of our kids who are living in poverty. The legislature has made it clear they're not interested in helping poor people. They're only interested in helping in working for their wealthy donors. Now, I've met people, and I don't blame them totally, but it's just dead wrong, that they see, it can have something to do with identity politics, or it can have something to do with just ignorance about the system, but they see unions as something for, like, they don't understand they can be in a union. Right, so they see union workers as getting like paid too much or something, you know, that kind of. And there's all sorts of corporate propaganda to reinforce that. So, for example, like when I went on strike, they inflated our salaries suddenly. They like use average salaries, including all the bosses, not just our wages, you know, to show. And we're paid this much. We're all like, really? We get paid that much? I don't think we would have gone on strike if we got paid that much. You know, it's like, we are nowhere near what we got paid. So in reality, so they do that stuff like that all the time. But what's bad is that when workers internalize that, you know, and they say, and there's even some like Maoism, even some left wing activists that they say, oh yeah, union workers, they're bought off by the system, they're bourgeoisified, blah, blah, blah. Nothing could be further from the truth. The difference in union pay and non-union pay is a lot. The difference between union benefits and non-union benefits is a lot, but it doesn't erase exploitation. It doesn't erase unfairness. It doesn't erase inequality.
That's where I'm at.
It's all temporarily. It's all temporary, you know, depending on how things go with the labor movement, you know? But so everyone needs to be in a union. Every worker needs to be in a union. There are a lot of things to do to make unions better, but you still basically need a union. So anyway, check out that article in Jacobin. Last but not least, we're going to have to go in a minute. Check out an op-ed by Sarah Jaffe, the New York Times of all places. The rising ghost of labor in the West Virginia teacher strike. Very interesting, because she makes the historical links. She talks about Janice. She talks about the early days of the labor movement when things like this had to happen because so much was illegal. It's just really, really good stuff. She wrote a book called Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt, which I'm interested in reading now. And check out anything you can about the West Virginia teacher strike, because this is a big moment. While they were on strike, a private sector strike happened where the Communication Workers of America went on strike at Western Union or something like that. I don't know what happened with that. The Oklahoma teachers, as you mentioned, they promised to go on strike in April. The workers, I heard last night, the workers
and they're linking up. I saw it on Democracy Now, where they're linking up with the West Virginia, you know, victory.
Yep. Yep. And hopefully, one thing we want to do in Socialist Alternative is, besides organize people down there, which we want to do, we don't have much of a presence there. We also want to get striking workers to go to other parts of the country and speak about their experience and talk about how they did what they did, because there's a lot of places where we have to overcome our own union leadership, unfortunately, to get to the point where we can do anything like a strike and really make improvements. But also more than that, we need to learn, you know, a lot from their victory, I think. Not that it's the be all and end all, and there are different conditions in different places, but it's just a really important moment. And I'm not saying there's gonna be an upsurge in unions or anything, but it's not ruled out. Certainly not ruled out that this will have a knock-on effect. It already has to a certain extent. And the more you can learn about it, whether you're an activist or not, the better. Let's end the show with a bit of absurdity here. And so find out more about the West Virginia strike. Oh, by the way, go to socialistalternative.org for our material, social alternatives material on the strike as well. Again, based on actually people going there on the ground, information, not just reading about it. And I got a lot of sort of testimony and interesting things from people that were there on this conference call I went to yesterday. I was on yesterday, and I was just really enthused. And it's really, really important. And we're going to use this certainly in all our organizing, like in Worcester, where Social Alternative is organizing with unions. We're going to say, hey, did you hear about the West Virginia teacher strike? ... And use that to open up a conversation about what has to happen there. Where, for example, the transit workers union are in struggle, and the Democrats, some of the Democrats have just put forward a privatization plan to totally screw over the bus drivers even further. They've already been messed over. And this is in the second biggest city in New England, where there isn't much transportation, and they want to make it even worse. But what I was referring to earlier, kind of a crazy thing to end the show with, you know who Jeff Bezos is, right? B-E-Z-O-S?
Oh, God. What's one with the
He's
guy?
Not God. He wants
no,
to be.
Amazon?
Yes. Yes. Amazon founder and CEO, Chief Executive Officer Jeff Bezos, started 2018 as the world's richest man, and his net worth has possibly skyrocketed so far this year. So Jeff Bezos' net worth is based on the price of Amazon stock and Amazon shares, which have been soaring up more than 50% over the past 6 months. Bezos started 2018 with a fortune worth nearly $100 billion, quickly added $10 billion, up $20 billion year to date. So he's making... Ready for it? How much do you think he makes? Did you see that? Did you look at this?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm trying not to have a stroke.
We'll give our listeners.
My blood pressure just went up.
How much does he make a minute? How much does Jeff Bezos, head of Amazon, make a minute in 2018?
You asking me?
No, I'm letting our listeners stew over it. Don't bother calling. We got to get off the air, unfortunately. It is $231,000 per minute in 2018. So every minute, Jeff Bezos has made roughly four times what the average American worker makes in a year. Notice average. That means that's including huge salaries. So I wonder what he makes compared to the median worker, American worker of the year. And what he makes compared to me is, well, if I could just like get my hands on that guy for 2 seconds and, you know, just say, hey, Jeff, how about a little loan? My life would change, you know, drastically. Anyway, we're done. We're out. Thanks for listening. Any last words?
Power to the people.
Goodbye with our favorite song, maybe.
Sky.